All right, let's dive in. This time we're tackling biblical prophecy. We've got a mountain of material here, lectures, articles, even some personal notes. Someone's been doing their homework.
Looks like someone's ready for a serious deep dive.
Absolutely. And some of these questions are pretty tough. Like, how could anyone back in ancient Israel tell if a prophet was legit?
Ah, yes, the age-old question of true prophets versus the, shall we say, less than accurate ones.
Exactly. Especially when they were getting all kinds of conflicting messages. It's enough to make your head spin. Luckily, we've got an expert with us to help sort it all out.
Well, I'll do my best to shed some light on this fascinating and often misunderstood aspect of ancient Israelite religion.
Perfect. So let's start with the basics. What was it actually like to be a prophet back then? Did they all get some kind of like official prophetic call?
It's interesting, the idea of a prophetic call wasn't as clear-cut as you might think. It seems to have varied quite a bit. Some prophets, like Jeremiah, describe these incredibly vivid encounters with God. Really dramatic, powerful experiences that left no room for doubt.
Right, like, okay, God, I get it. You want me to speak for you loud and clear. But what about other prophets? Was it always this big, dramatic event?
Not necessarily. Think about someone like Samuel. His path to becoming a prophet seems to have been much more gradual.
So less of a lightning bolt moment and more of a slow burn.
Precisely. Some individuals may have emerged as influential figures in their communities, and their insights and pronouncements over time gained recognition as prophetic.
So no certified prophet badge back then.
Not quite. Which, of course, leads us back to the problem of figuring out who is the real deal, especially with those conflicting messages flying around.
Right. How were people supposed to know who to listen to? It must have been so confusing.
You can imagine the dilemma. The Mosaic Law did offer some guidance. Deuteronomy, for example, talks about judging a prophet based on whether their predictions actually came to pass.
Seems logical enough. Did it work?
Well, in theory, sure. But even that wasn't foolproof. There's a pretty intense story about a showdown between Jeremiah and another prophet named Hananiah.
Oh, yeah, that one's a real nail biter. They're both claiming to speak for God, but with totally opposite messages about the whole Babylonian exile thing. Jeremiah's all doom and gloom, predicting disaster, while Hananiah's promising peace and a quick return for the exiles. Talk about mixed messages.
Exactly. It must have been incredibly difficult for people to know who to believe. In those kinds of situations, discerning true prophecy often boiled down to something more than just checking off boxes.
So what? Like a spiritual gut check?
You could say that. It was about weighing the message against what they knew about God's character and the covenant promises. A matter of spiritual and theological judgment, not just a simple test.
Okay, so they had to really know their stuff, theologically speaking. Makes them wonder if we've lost some of that discernment today.
That's a great point, and it actually connects to a question you raised earlier. Can we use prophecy as evidence for the truth of the Bible? It's a question that's been debated for centuries.
Yeah, I was really struck by some of the stuff in Isaiah, especially that passage where he seems to predict the rise of Cyrus the Persian, like over a century before it happened.
Isaiah 44:28, right? It even names Cyrus specifically. For many, it's seen as irrefutable proof of divine inspiration. After all, how could a human being possibly know that far in advance?
Yeah, it does seem pretty convincing. But then I saw some of your notes about scholars who have issues with the authorship of Isaiah and Daniel, too, for that matter. Are they saying those prophecies were written after the fact?
That's the heart of the debate. These scholars point to certain features of the text, like the language and historical details, that seem to reflect a later time period. Like in Isaiah chapters 14 to 66, seem to assume the Babylonian exile has already happened.
Which wouldn't make sense if Isaiah himself wrote them, right? Because he lived way before the exile.
Exactly. It even mentions Cyrus by name. So the question becomes, were these passages added later, maybe by another prophet?
So maybe not a single author, but a collection of prophetic voices over time.
That's one possibility. It reminds us that the Bible isn't just some static text that dropped out of the sky. It evolved over time, shaped by different voices and historical contexts. And understanding those contexts is crucial when interpreting the prophecies within them.
So context is key. Got it. But even with context, how do we even begin to decipher the language of prophecy? It's not exactly known for being straightforward and easy to understand.
True. There's no magic decoder ring, unfortunately. But understanding the culture and literary conventions of the time can help a lot. For example, ancient prophets often viewed time differently than we do.
Differently how?
Well, we tend to think of time as a straight line, moving from past to present to future. But for the prophets, it was more cyclical, like a wheel turning, a pattern of creation, fall, and redemption, repeating throughout history.
Time is a circle. That's a pretty tricky concept. How does that affect how we understand prophecy?
Imagine that wheel turning. Certain events and themes might recur throughout history, but in different forms. So a prophecy might have a smaller fulfillment in the prophet's own time, but also point to a larger future fulfillment that echoes the past. That's where the idea of double sense comes in.
Double sense.
It means a prophecy can have multiple layers of meaning that unfold over time. It's not just about predicting specific events in a literal one-to-one way.
So we're not just dealing with straightforward predictions, but with layers upon layers of meaning, possibly spanning generations. That's pretty mind-blowing.
It certainly adds a layer of complexity. And here's another wrinkle. Not every prophetic statement was an absolute, unavoidable decree. Many prophecies were conditional.
Conditional, like, if you do this, then this will happen.
Exactly. Their fulfillment depended on specific actions or responses from the people.
Okay, this is getting complicated. Time is a circle, multiple layers of meaning, conditional prophecies. It's no wonder people have been debating the meaning of these texts for centuries.
It's definitely a challenge. But it's also what makes it so fascinating, wouldn't you say? It's an invitation to dig deeper, to grapple with the text, and to discover new layers of meaning. It's not about finding easy answers, but about embarking on a journey of understanding.
Okay, I'm starting to see the appeal. So we've talked about who the prophets were and how to approach their message, but why should we even care about these ancient pronouncements? What do they have to do with us today?
That's the million-dollar question, and one we'll continue to unpack as we go. But one thing's for sure, these prophecies weren't just about predicting specific events. They were about revealing God's heart, God's character, and God's vision for the world. And those themes are just as relevant today as they were back then.
Okay, so we've been talking about how to approach these ancient prophecies, you know, thinking about the historical context, the cultural nuances, the different layers of meaning. But I'm really curious to see how this all plays out, you know, in practice. What are some specific examples from the prophets that can really highlight these challenges and, you know, show us why these texts still matter today?
Well, we touched on Isaiah and his seemingly impossible prediction about Cyrus. But there are other prophets who really push the boundaries of what we might consider normal behavior, even for a prophet.
Oh, I know exactly what you mean.
Think about Ezekiel, for example.
Oh, yeah. Good old Ezekiel. He was a real character.
He's known for these really dramatic, symbolic actions that would have been absolutely shocking to his audience.
Oh, yeah. Ezekiel definitely takes the prize for, like, prophetic performance art, right? Building a model of Jerusalem under siege, lying on his side for over a year, eating a scroll. I mean, wouldn't people have thought he'd completely lost it?
Well, that's precisely the point. These weren't just random acts of craziness. Ezekiel was using these visual metaphors to embody God's message in a way that transcended language.
Right. It's like actions speak louder than words, right?
Imagine the impact of seeing this respected figure, you know, acting out these strange and sometimes disturbing scenes. It would have been impossible to ignore.
It would definitely get your attention.
A powerful way to shake people out of their complacency.
So it's like he's creating a living parable, right? Forcing people to confront the reality of their situation, even if it makes them uncomfortable. Were there other prophets who used these kinds of dramatic tactics?
Absolutely. We see symbolic actions throughout the prophetic books. Isaiah walked around naked for 3 years to symbolize the coming humiliation of Egypt. Jeremiah smashed a clay pot to represent the fragility of Jerusalem.
Wow, they really went all out.
And these actions weren't just for show. They were very carefully chosen to convey specific theological truths in a way that would really hit home.
It makes you wonder if we've lost something by moving away from these more visual, experiential forms of communication.
Perhaps.
But let's get back to this idea of prophecy and its relevance for today. You mentioned that that different interpretations of prophecy can influence views on current events, especially when it comes to the future of Israel. Can you give us some concrete examples of how these interpretations, you know, play out in real world situations?
Well, one area where this becomes really apparent is in the ongoing debate about the status of Jerusalem.
Right. It's a hot topic for sure.
Some groups, particularly those who hold to a dispensational premillennial view, believe that the modern state of Israel represents like a direct fulfillment of biblical prophecy.
Okay.
For them, Jewish control over Jerusalem is essential for the return of Christ. It's not just a theological idea. It shapes their entire political outlook.
So they're seeing current events in the Middle East, like through the lens of their understanding of end times prophecy.
Exactly. They're trying to fit the pieces of the puzzle together, so to speak, using prophecy as their guide. And their interpretation directly informs their political views and actions. But other Christians, you know, who might emphasize the continuity between Israel and the church, might see the modern state of Israel as a significant historical development, but not necessarily a direct fulfillment of specific biblical prophecies.
So you're saying that the same prophetic texts can lead to like very different perspectives, maybe even opposing actions.
That's exactly right. And it seems like navigating this territory requires a lot of humility and a willingness to listen to diverse viewpoints.
It's definitely not a simple issue.
Absolutely. And it's important to remember that these aren't just, you know, abstract theological debates. They have real-world consequences for people's lives.
Right. These aren't just ideas. They affect how people actually live and interact with each other.
Another example where this plays out is in the realm of Christian Zionism.
Okay, I've heard of that, but can you explain it a little more?
This movement, often rooted in dispensational premillennialism, advocates for, you know, for strong political and financial support for the state of Israel. They base this on their understanding of God's promises to the Jewish people.
So they're not just reading about these prophecies, they're actively trying to, like, bring them about.
Yes, and their actions, while, you know, while motivated by their theological convictions, are also intertwined with complex political and social realities.
It sounds like it can get pretty messy.
It's a reminder that interpretations of prophecy don't exist in a vacuum. They have the potential to shape our understanding of the world and influence our decisions in really profound ways.
Okay, I'm starting to get a sense of just how complicated all of this is. It's not just about, like, decoding some ancient text. It's about understanding how those texts are being interpreted and applied, you know, in ways that have real-world consequences, sometimes even unintended ones. So how do we navigate this complex terrain, you know, without getting lost in the maze of interpretations?
That's the challenge, isn't it? It requires a commitment to careful study, a willingness to engage with diverse viewpoints, and a healthy dose of humility.
Humility, yeah. That seems to be a recurring theme here.
We need to be aware of our own biases and assumptions, and we need to be willing to challenge our own perspectives, even when it's uncomfortable.
So it's not just about finding the right interpretation, but about engaging in an ongoing process of discernment and dialogue, you know, recognizing that we might not always have all the answers.
Exactly. And that brings us to another important question you raised earlier. The relationship between the Old and New Testaments, particularly when it comes to the concept of continuity and discontinuity.
Right, because if we're talking about the relevance of prophecy for today, we can't just ignore the New Testament.
How do we interpret the promises and prophecies of the Old Testament, you know, in light of the coming of Christ and the establishment of the church? That's a huge question.
Yeah, how do they fit together? Do they tell one unified story, or is there like a break, a shift in God's plan?
It's a question that has sparked centuries of theological debate. Some see a seamless continuity, arguing that God's plan for Israel has simply been extended to include the church. Others emphasize a discontinuity, suggesting that the church has replaced Israel as the primary focus of God's redemptive plan. This gets into the whole debate about, you know, replacement theology or supersessionism.
Okay, I can see how this could get pretty heated.
And it's a debate that needs to be approached with sensitivity and a deep respect for both Jewish and Christian traditions. We need to recognize that these are complex issues with a long and often painful history.
I'm sensing this might be a rabbit hole we could easily fall into. Maybe we should save a deeper exploration of this debate for another deep dive.
Probably wise.
But for now, let's circle back to this idea of finding relevance in prophecy for our lives today. We've talked about the big picture stuff, Israel, the church, end times. But what about the more personal, individual level? Can these ancient texts speak to our everyday struggles, our hopes, our fears?
I think that's where the true power of prophecy lies. While it might seem grand and sweeping, dealing with nations and empires, it also addresses the human condition in all its, you know, in all its messiness and complexity.
Right, because we're all human, facing human challenges, regardless of what century we live in.
Exactly. The prophets spoke about issues like injustice, oppression, greed, idolatry themes that are just as relevant today as they were thousands of years ago.
So it's not just about, you know, deciphering cryptic codes about the future. It's about finding wisdom and guidance for navigating the challenges of being human in a broken world.
These prophets weren't just fortune tellers. They were spiritual guides. They challenged people to live lives of integrity and faithfulness.
And they offered hope too, right?
Absolutely. They also offered words of hope, comfort, and challenge, you know, reminding people that even in the midst of suffering, God is present and working to bring about restoration.
It's the message we all need to hear, I think. So these prophets pointed us towards a vision of a world transformed by justice and righteousness.
A world where God's will is done on earth as it is in heaven.
That's a powerful message. It makes me want to, like, dive back into those prophetic books with a fresh perspective. But before we do, maybe we should offer some practical tips for how listeners can approach these texts in a way that's both, you know, intellectually stimulating and spiritually enriching. What are some key things to keep in mind as we embark on this journey?
That's a great idea. First and foremost, I'd encourage listeners to approach these texts with humility and a willingness to learn.
Humility again.
Don't be afraid to ask questions, to grapple with difficult passages, and to seek out diverse perspectives. Remember, there's no shame in admitting you don't have all the answers. In fact, that's where the real learning begins.
So embrace the mystery and the ambiguity. Don't expect prophecy to be like a paint-by-numbers kit where you just fill in the blanks. It's about wrestling with the text and allowing it to challenge and stretch our understanding.
Exactly. Second, I'd suggest starting with a good study Bible or commentary that can provide, historical and cultural background. Understanding the context in which these prophecies were given is essential for grasping their meaning.
So do your homework. Don't just jump into the deep end without knowing how to swim. What other tools might be helpful?
Well, there are many great resources available online and in libraries. Look for books and articles that explore different interpretive approaches. And don't be afraid to consult scholars from diverse theological backgrounds.
It sounds like there's a lot out there.
Remember, the goal isn't to find the right answer, but to engage in a thoughtful and informed dialogue with the text, allowing different perspectives to enrich our understanding.
Okay, so we've got our study Bibles, our commentaries, our online resources, anything else we need in our prophetic toolkit.
Most importantly, bring an open heart and a prayerful spirit to your study. Ask God to illuminate the text and to speak to you through these ancient words. Remember, prophecy is ultimately about God's relationship with humanity. And it's in that relationship that we find the deepest meaning and relevance.
Well said. And with that inspiring reminder, we're ready to move into the final part of our deep dive. We'll wrap things up with some final thoughts and challenges for our listeners, so stay tuned. Okay, we're back for the final part of our prophetic journey. It's been quite a ride. We've covered so much ground, from like deciphering ancient symbols to figuring out how prophecy might shape our understanding of, like current events. It's clear this isn't just some dusty old topic that nobody cares about anymore.
It really isn't. Prophecy is, well, it's alive and kicking, even in the 21st century.
Definitely. What's really stood out to me during this whole deep dive is how these ancient prophecies, written, thousands of years ago, still speak to like the core of what it means to be human.
That's the amazing thing, isn't it?
We're still wrestling with the same basic issues: justice, righteousness, faithfulness.
The very things the prophets were railing against back in their day.
Yeah. It's like they were holding up a mirror to their own society, and we can still see ourselves in that reflection. We might not be facing like Babylonian armies or rebuilding temples or anything, but the core struggles are the same. But with so many different ways to interpret all of this, how can we be sure we're not just reading our own ideas into these texts? How do we develop that critical discernment we keep talking about?
That's the key question, isn't it? And honestly, it's more important now than ever, especially with like the internet and all the information flying around. I think the first step is, well, it's just acknowledging that we all come to the Bible with our own baggage, our own preconceived notions and biases.
Yeah, absolutely.
Ask yourself, like, what are my assumptions about prophecy? How might those be shaping my interpretation? Sometimes, our own desires for a certain outcome can cloud our judgment.
So a little self-awareness goes a long way. Check your baggage at the door before you even open up Isaiah, right? But what about when we're relying on other sources, like commentaries or articles online? How do we know who to trust? There's so much out there.
Right, and that's where critical thinking comes in. You can't just take someone's word for it, even if they sound really convincing or have a fancy title or whatever. Do your research. Look into their, their credentials, their theological background. See if they might have a particular, agenda that they're pushing.
Right. So it's like checking the source of a news article, right? Just because it pops up on your feed doesn't mean it's accurate or unbiased.
Exactly. And unfortunately, there are people out there who capitalize on, on the complexity of prophecy. They use these sensationalized interpretations to grab attention or even manipulate others. Remember, genuine prophecy is about, it's about God's character and God's purposes for the world. It's not about, predicting the future for personal gain or entertainment.
Right. It's not about getting the inside scoop on the latest, cosmic drama. It's about understanding God's heart and how we're called to live in response to that.
That's it. Keep your eyes on the big picture. The the overarching narrative of God's redemptive plan for humanity. Don't get sidetracked by these shiny, sensationalized interpretations that promise to unlock all the secrets.
Right.
Prophecy is about engaging in a thoughtful and prayerful dialogue with the text, letting it challenge us, shape us, and draw us closer to God.
So it's a journey, not a destination.
Exactly. There will always be, you know, mysteries, things we might not fully understand, but that's okay. It's the wrestling, the questioning, the seeking that helps us grow and deepen our faith.
And on that note, I think we've reached the end of our deep dive. We've covered a lot of ground, explored different perspectives, and hopefully equipped you with some tools to continue your own exploration of biblical prophecy.
Absolutely. It's been a pleasure joining you on this journey. And remember, this is just the beginning. Keep exploring, keep questioning, keep seeking. Let the prophetic word continue to shape your understanding of God and your place in the world.
Thanks for tuning into the Deep Dive. We'll see you next time.